This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
South Africa is marking its annual Freedom Day holiday amid continuous calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down, where demonstrations were organized by an alliance of opposition parties, religious groups, labor unions, and civil society.
That's Tuso Kamalo reporting from Pretoria, South Africa. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, an aid organization says climate change is making the humanitarian crises in the Horn of Africa worse. Experts on U.S.-Egypt relations urge Congress to rethink its annual $1.5 billion aid package to Cairo. And Gambian President Adama Barrow is on a West Africa tour and will visit Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ghana. We'll have these stories and more. Stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, South Africa is marking its annual Freedom Day holiday amid continued calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down. Tuso Kamalo reports from Pretoria, where demonstrations were organized by an alliance of opposition parties, religious groups, labor unions, and civil society.
South Africans gathered to celebrate the 23rd anniversary of the country's first post-apartheid elections. President Jacob Zuma addressed the main gathering in his home province of KwaZulu-Natal.
This day must be the day on which we are happy to contribute more in building South Africa. Happy Freedom Day to you all.
Speaking in Zulu, Zuma criticized opposition parties but did not directly address the ongoing political crisis. But in Pretoria, the tensions were on display.
Zuma must go!
Hundreds of people demonstrated Thursday in Port Elizabeth and Pretoria. The protest was organized by the newly formed Freedom Movement. Speakers at the gathering in Pretoria described Zuma as a danger to the country's heart and freedom. They accused him of flouting the constitution, corruption, and making uninformed decisions that have hurt the economy. Among the speakers was Ndileka Mandela, granddaughter of South Africa's father of freedom, Nelson Mandela.
The people shall govern. That means that the people have the right to call their government to account. We are today calling our government to account.
The protests come at a time when Parliament is preparing to vote on a motion of no confidence against President Zuma. Opposition parties have approached the Constitutional Court to request the vote be a secret ballot. And Democratic Alliance Party leader Musi Maimane, also at the protest, made it clear what that vote should achieve.
Zuma is no longer fit to become the president of the republic. And it's South Africans united saying, enough is enough.
The ruling ANC, with its majority in parliament, has been able to defeat an impeachment attempt and several votes of no confidence against Zuma since he took office in 2009. But a secret ballot in the upcoming vote would be a first and could leave Zuma more vulnerable. Meanwhile, the crisis took a new twist on Thursday as the country's priority crimes unit announced it had arrested a 23-year-old man who authorities say was planning a hit on 19 people, including cabinet ministers believed to have benefited from Zuma's alleged corrupt dealings. Zuma has weathered several corruption scandals in the past year. This latest bout of opposition to Zuma began last month when he fired a popular finance minister. Many senior members of the ruling ANC and its alliance partners have recently openly called on Zuma to step down. An anti-Zuma march in the capital earlier this month drew tens of thousands of demonstrators. No new date has been set for the no-confidence vote as Parliament awaits the Constitutional Court's ruling. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Pretoria.
The aid organization Oxfam says climate change is making the humanitarian crises in the Horn of Africa worse. Regional Director Nigel Trix told Reuters that previously once-in-a-lifetime droughts now come more often. He says for the first time, many camels and donkeys, which are typically hardy animals, are dying off. He adds the lives of pastoralists have been greatly disrupted. About 12 million people in Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya are at risk of hunger due to drought. The UN warns Somalia could slip into famine for the second time in 6 years. East Africa has seen poor rainfall for 3 years in a row while experiencing higher temperatures. A bipartisan panel of experts on Egypt-U.S. relations has urged Congress to rethink its annual $1.5 billion aid package to Cairo. They also described Egypt as a floundering authoritarian state. The scholars made their comments at a recent hearing of the Senate Appropriations Committee. VOA's Mohammed Al-Shanawi has details.
The three experts who testified at the hearing urged senators to rethink U.S. aid package to Egypt as the country fails to improve its human rights record. They argued that Egypt under President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi is a military-run state with no respect for human rights and rampant with government-sponsored anti-Americanism. Michelle Dunn is the director of Middle East Program at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. She began her remarks by mentioning recently leaked footage that appears to show Egyptian soldiers executing terror suspects in Sinai.
Egypt does face a serious threat from terrorism, but the unprecedented human rights abuses and political repression practiced by the government since 2013 is fanning the flames rather than putting them out. And the United States, at this point, it does not really have a way to ensure that our assistance is not making the problem worse instead of better.
Dunn commended President Trump's apparent reluctance to give Cairo whatever it wants as a positive sign. She said that during President Sisi's visit to Washington, he didn't get a promise from the administration to keep aid coming without questioning conditions in Egypt. President Barack Obama's former Assistant Secretary of State for Human Rights, Tom Malinowski, focused his testimony on the persistent crackdown and repression in Egypt.
Over the last 2 or 3 years, the primary priority of the Egyptian military and of General Sisi has not been to fight terrorism or to improve governance. It has been to make sure that what happened in 2011, the Tahrir Square Rising, something like that can never, ever, ever, ever happen again in Egypt, and that the power of the military over the country's politics and economics is not challenged again.
Malinowski said, as a result, the military has concentrated on persecuting political opponents, peaceful protesters, and independent non-governmental organizations, the very people in Egypt who despise jihadists. Malinowski criticized Egypt for its attacks against U.S.-funded non-governmental organizations and urged President Donald Trump to adopt an America-first human rights policy. In his view, such a policy would call for the release of Egyptian-American political prisoners like aid worker Aya Hagazi. She and four other humanitarian workers were recently released after President Trump spoke with President el-Sisi on her behalf. Elliot Abrams, a senior fellow for Middle Eastern Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations, urged Congress to link up to 25% of the annual $1.3 billion military assistance package to progress on human rights. Current law only restricts 15% of such aid. He said many of the big-ticket items Egypt is buying with the United States grants, such as fighter jets, are useless for battling terrorist threats such as the Islamic State, and accused Egypt of creating more jihadists through its operations in Sinai.
I mean, if you take 60,000 political prisoners, and that's the number that there are in Egypt, people have not committed acts of violence, beat them up, toss them into prison, keep them there for years, incarcerate them with real jihadis, and what comes out at the end of that process is more jihadis.
Abrams argued also that Egypt has lost the regional influence it had when the United States urged it to make peace with Israel in the late 1970s. Senators of both parties in the committee seemed to agree with much of the testimony offered by the panel. Committee Chairman Republican Senator Lindsey Graham said at the end of the hearing, "We need to reshape the relationship in a way that's sustainable. What I see is disheartening, and as to the taxpayers' dollars we have, I think we are obligated to spend them wisely, consistent with our values." The administration has proposed replacing military assistance grants with loans for all countries except Israel, and the State Department is seeking a 42% cut from $143 million to $75 million in economic aid to Egypt, according to draft budget documents obtained by Foreign Policy magazine. Mohammed El-Shenawi, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Mohammed. In response to that report, Egypt's foreign ministry says the experts invited to testify at the Senate hearing are biased against Egypt. It says their testimony was an attempt to harm good relations between Egypt and the Trump administration. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Coming up on 17 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. South Africa is marking its annual Freedom Day holiday amid continued calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down. Oxfam says climate change is making the humanitarian crises in the Horn of Africa worse. And a bipartisan panel of experts on Egypt-U.S. relations urges Congress to rethink its annual $1.5 billion aid package to Cairo. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. A Burkina Faso court has postponed the start of the trial of ex-President Blaise Compaoré and his former cabinet. The accused are being tried for their alleged role in the violent crackdown on the 2014 uprising that ultimately ended Compaoré's nearly three decades in power. Bram Posthumus has the latest from Ouagadougou.
The much-anticipated trial of former President Blaise Compaoré and almost his entire former cabinet was supposed to start Thursday. But instead, it was adjourned before it even began. According to sources within the Ministry of Justice, there was a scheduling conflict. The Lawyers Association of Burkina Faso is holding its annual reunion, so the lawyers were at their official banquet and not at the trial. A few showed up, but only to request the hearing be adjourned. This was granted by the court's president, Mathieu Ouédraogo. The former government is on trial for allegedly authorizing the use of force against protesters in late October 2014. The popular uprising would cost Compaoré his presidency. According to the official toll, 24 people lost their lives during those 2 days. But the case before the court concerns the deaths of seven demonstrators, shot dead allegedly by security forces. In all, 32 members of the former government are on trial. Compaoré is being tried in his capacity as Minister for Defence, a post he also held at the time of his ouster. Much of Burkina Faso's civil society, which drove the uprising and has documented abuses that went on at the time, is turning its back on the proceedings. A prominent civil society figure present at the court Thursday made an impromptu statement immediately after the adjournment. Safia Tou Lopez Zongo said that she held no hope at all that justice would be served. This is a spectacle on behalf of people who are guiding this from behind their desks, though she declined to name exactly who those people might be. Proponents of the trial say it sends a clear signal that nobody can escape justice, but critics dismiss it as political score settling.
Ce procès vise un seul objectif, c'est de condamner les ex.
According to Isaka Lingani, the editor-in-chief of L'Opinion, which is close to the former ruling party, the trial serves to clear up the remaining bits of the previous government. Justice, in his opinion, will never be served. NGOs have pointed accusing fingers at the military, especially the now disbanded Special Presidential Guard. They are allegedly responsible for the deaths and injuries that occurred in October 2014. But no military personnel are on trial today. Why? That question remains unanswered. The prosecutor was not available for an interview. As for Compaoré, he remains in Ivory Coast, where he fled after his ouster and has since taken citizenship. The trial is now expected to begin May the 4th. Bram Posthumus for VOA News, Ouagadougou.
Gambian President Adama Barrow is on a West Africa tour and will visit Sierra Leone, Liberia, and Ghana. Barrow took office in January after defeating longtime ruler Yahya Jammeh in December's presidential election. However, he needed the support of West African states and their militaries to convince Jammeh to step down and leave the country. His West Africa tour will focus on trade and other issues. To learn more about Barrow's early days in office, VOA's William Eagle spoke to Pandaria Mbai, founder and editor of the online Freedom newspaper.
President Adama Barrow and his delegation arrived in Freetown on Wednesday on the eve of Sierra Leone's independence. Mr. Barrow has been accompanied by a sizable entourage. President Ernest Bai Koroma of Sierra Leone hosted a banquet dinner for Mr. Barrow and his delegation. The two leaders had a tete-a-tete meeting. Mr. Barrow has self-styled his tour of West Africa as a thank you tour. From Sierra Leone, he will be heading out to Liberia and Ghana. Nigeria is also among the countries he intends to visit.
Pandaria, are you also looking for any kind of economic support from these neighboring countries?
Absolutely, especially in Nigeria. President Barrow is hoping to at least, strengthen the bilateral ties between the Gambia and Nigeria. But the trip has been greeted with mixed reaction in Banjulville. While some welcome the trip, others opine that the trip is a misplaced priority. The Gambia is currently battling with economic and national security challenges. The country has less than 2 months' import cover in its drying state coffers. Inflation is on the rise in the Gambia. Cost of living is also getting higher. There is massive youth unemployment in the country. The nation's energy sector is in shambles. Mr. Barrow has just clocked his 100 days in office. And apparently there is massive power outages in the country, acute water shortages as well. Hence, this past week, the government of the Gambia decided to sign an energy deal with a Chinese state company to help revamp the situation.
In terms of his 100 days in office, what has he accomplished?
So far, there are mixed feelings. Some are saying that there is freedom in the country. The Gambians are free now to speak up. They can criticize the government. There is also national security challenges currently confronting the government. Just this past week, the economic forces stationed in Banjul had a showdown with the Gambian armed forces stationed at the home of former President Yahya Jammeh in Kanilai. The Senegalese forces reportedly opened fire at the Gambian forces in what was described as an unprovoked incident, leaving 3 Gambian soldiers injured. Bill,
what does the government say about the incident?
The Minister of Interior, Maifati, indicated that it was an accident. There was somehow an accidental discharge of weapon in Kanilai. The economic forces are also saying that it was a misunderstanding and it will not happen again. But the National Assembly member for the area, Musa Amul Nyazi, was quoted as saying that the Senegalese troops wanted to use his locality as a staging ground to attack the rebels in the southern province of Casamance. Senegal has been battling the rebellion in Casamance for decades now. Now that there is a transition in the Gambia, Senegal being the neighbor of the Gambia, some are saying that they wanted to fight 2 missions at the same time. One to help normalize the political situation in the Gambia. On the other hand, also to settle scores with the rebels along the border.
That's Pandaria Mbai, founder and editor of the online Freedom newspaper. He spoke with VOA's William Eagle. Income disparity and the release of carbon into the atmosphere that causes climate change may seem like separate serious problems, but a new study shows that the richer a person, a group, or a nation is, the more likely they will produce the greenhouse gases. This is partly because wealth drives demand for air travel and gas-greedy cars, for example. Andrew Jorgensen is a professor of sociology and environmental studies at Boston College. He co-authored the report linking wealth and carbon emissions in the U.S. He spoke with its health effects on the poor with VOA's Adam Phillips.
We've been looking at the relationship between income inequality and anthropogenic human-caused carbon dioxide emissions that suggested that in nations with a higher level of income inequality have higher levels of carbon emissions after taking into account in the models all the other well-known drivers of emissions, including population size, levels of economic development, manufacturing, urbanization, environmental regulations, and so on.
Is that because they're just rich and they can afford the kind of machinery, for example, that does emit carbon?
We think that that's part of the explanation for sure, that individuals and households that have more wealth and income, they're consuming more, so that's leading to higher emissions. But also we think that what explains this is that those that have higher incomes also tend to be the owners of factories and different facilities that use more energy and generate more carbon emissions. And therefore, they use their income and wealth to try to influence environmental regulations in the political sphere. Because if the environmental regulations are lower or not enforced, they can benefit from that as the owners of different facilities that are producing the things that we all consume.
I'm wondering how difficult this must be to fight because so much of the, let's just call them toys or machinery that the upper classes use are aspirational things that the lower class wants to use if only they can afford it.
So you're absolutely right that there is this challenge, this aspirational challenge, where we want to improve our quality of life by consuming more things, which can, you know, to some extent make us happier and healthier. But perhaps it gets to a certain point, though, that consuming more and more doesn't necessarily lead to greater well-being and greater happiness.
Well, speaking of health, it's very often the case that people who live in poor places or who have less economic clout, they tend to live near the places where there's more pollution.
That's an excellent point. There's a long tradition of research that shows that those that are typically most responsible for environmental harms or environmental pollution aren't those that are most vulnerable, that it tends to be those that have lower income and lower wealth tend to be more directly exposed to environmental harms, but they tend to be the least responsible for this, whether it's carbon emissions or water pollution or deforestation, for example. Thinking of ways of equalizing incomes in different contexts could have a whole host of environmental and human well-being benefits simultaneously, which from my point of view, as a sustainability researcher, seems like a very positive sort of set of considerations.
That was Professor Andrew Jorgensen of Boston College. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Mpoga. Join me for VOA's discussion program, Reporters Roundtable, every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll have African journalists and expert guests that share their ideas and take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. So please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. Oh, every day and every night I fall in love with you. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.